Good morning. It's certainly good to see everyone here this morning. Let me invite you to open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. Over the last several weeks, we've been looking at Jesus' comments in the Sermon on the Mount recorded in Matthew chapter 5 through chapter 7. As we consider this great sermon that was taught by our Lord, we see from this sermon that Jesus Christ wants us to be characterized by true righteousness. We can see from this sermon that Jesus is going to give us six illustrations or six examples of what true righteousness is. Remember from Matthew 5, verse number 20, if we're going to be citizens of God's kingdom, our righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees and the scribes. And we see beginning at verse 21, going down through verse number 48, Jesus illustrates what that looks like. You know, as we look at these six illustrations, we've been emphasizing these, going through these one by one over the last several weeks. And what we can conclude is that Jesus Christ is touching on every area of life. Now, as I thought about that, I've mentioned that in a roundabout way, but that really came to the surface this week as I was thinking about this fifth illustration that we're going to be looking at this morning. As Jesus goes through these illustrations, He touches on every area of life. And let me give you this breakdown. In 21 through 26, our first illustration, Jesus talks about our church life, how we relate to one another. If we know that we have aught against a brother, remember Jesus says we're to leave our gift at the altar and we are to be first reconciled with our brother. We're to be right with one another. And then we can come and we can worship God. Jesus talks about our thought life. Verses 27 through verse number 30. God knows what we're thinking. If we're going to be a part of God's kingdom, we can't have adulterous thoughts running through our mind. Lustful thoughts. Evil thoughts. Verses 31 through verse 32, Jesus talks about married life. In verses 33 through 37, He talks about business life. Let your no be no and your yes, yes. Of all people in the world, Christians should be the most honest. And no matter what, and let me emphasize that, no matter what, as God's children, as citizens of God's kingdom, we should keep our word even to our own hurt, as Solomon or as the psalmist would declare in Psalm 15, 1 through 5. This morning we'll be looking at verses 38 through 42, and Jesus is going to talk about our personal rights and possessions. We all have personal rights. We all have possessions. Jesus is going to talk about that. And then you'll notice, or we'll notice next week in our lesson, the sixth illustration. Jesus is going to talk about our enemies, our relationship with our enemies. You see, being a follower of Jesus means that we are to follow Him in every part of our life. In everything that we do, we are to be followers of Him. Every area of life, we could say, is to be brought to conformity to His will. But that can be a challenge at times, because a lot of times His will goes against our deepest held beliefs and values. Because God is always challenging us. And we see this in the Sermon on the Mount. God is calling us to a high standard. And so as you work through these illustrations, they are challenging. And rightfully so. And so as you go through and as you work through each one, I would write down Isaiah 55 verses 8 and 9, because what the prophet Isaiah reminds us of will help us understand God's high calling. You remember where God says to Isaiah, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth," God says, "so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." I truly believe we can see what God was saying as we look at the Sermon on the Mount, especially when we look at these six illustrations. They will challenge who we are. They will challenge the way that we go through life and the way we conduct ourselves in this world. And so this morning in Matthew chapter 5, we're going to be looking at verses 38 down through verse number 42. What we're going to do is first, we're going to note the principle and really this pattern, this outline that I'm giving you can be used with each illustration. First, we're going to note the principle of the Mosaic Law, what the Mosaic Law taught, and then we're going to mention the perversion of Jewish thinking. And then we're going to spend some time and see how Jesus puts all of this into perspective. The principle, the perversion, and then number three, the perspective. Let's begin looking at the principle of the Mosaic Law. And it's seen there in verse number 38. Listen to what Jesus begins to record for us. "You have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth." Now that's how the Pharisees and the scribes interacted. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But what is interesting is behind their way of thinking is an Old Testament passage. And as I've been saying throughout this sermon, a lot of times the Jews, the Pharisees and the scribes, they would take that principle, they would take that passage and they would misinterpret the meaning. They would put a twist on it. And thus they would come up with their traditions, and a lot of times their traditions basically was their way to justify their evil conduct. And you're going to see that with this particular passage. But what I want to do as we think about this Mosaic principle, I want you to see how this particular verse is used in the Old Testament, because it's fascinating. And when we see how it is used, we see how the Pharisees and the scribes made a tradition out of it. How they misapplied it. How they would use the Scriptures to justify their ungodly conduct. As we think about this phrase, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, it's not really hard to understand, because this particular phrase is found only three times in the Old Testament Scriptures. And I briefly want to look at each one of those examples. And so if you have your Old Testament, let's go back to the book of Exodus. You may want to mark your spot there. And Matthew 5, we're going to start in the book of Exodus, and then we'll turn to Leviticus, and then the book of Deuteronomy. I want to show you how this phrase is used. Let's turn over to Exodus chapter 21. Exodus chapter 21. It's interesting to look at the whole context of chapter 21, but for time's sake, I want to begin in Exodus chapter 21, and we'll begin in verse number 22. Exodus chapter 21, and you'll see that God is giving laws relating to bodily injury, okay? Now beginning in verse number 22, "If men strive and hurt a woman with child, so that her fruit departeth from her, and yet no mischief followeth, he shall be surely punished." The idea in the Hebrew, he would be fined according as the woman's husband will lay upon him. "And he shall pay as the judges determine." Now that word right there in verse 22 is really key to understanding this phrase that we're about to look at. The judges shall determine. Look at verse 23. And if any mischief follow, then thou shalt give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. What you see in Exodus 21, 20 through to 24 is a civil situation. Situations that are brought before the leaders of God's people. They're brought before the judges. That is how that phrase is used in the Old Testament. Now let's look at the second example found in Leviticus chapter 24. The second use of the same phrase. Leviticus chapter 24. I want to begin in verse number 21. And verse 21, he that killeth a beast, he shall restore it. And he that killeth a man, he shall be put to death. Within God's laws, we see that there was to be equity. Okay, verse 22, ye shall have one manner of law as well for the stranger and one for your own country. Go back up to verse number 20. Breach for breach, eye for eye, there's the phrase, tooth for tooth, as he hath caused a blemish in a man, so shall it be done again to him. You see this phrase, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, teaches us that the punishment that is given to the guilty must meet the crime. Again, the punishment must fit the crime. But even here in Leviticus chapter 24, we see from the whole context that again, God is dealing with a civil situation. We see how that phrase is used in a civil setting in Exodus 21 and also Leviticus chapter 24. Now let me give you the third example where this phrase is used. Turn over, if you would, to Deuteronomy chapter 19. Deuteronomy chapter 19. You can see that again God is giving His people laws against removing the landmarks in verse number 14. He gives laws and relating to witnesses. Before justice could be carried out, there had to be sufficient witnesses in order to find somebody guilty for breaking the law. By the mouth of two witnesses or the mouth of three witnesses, verse number 15, shall the matter be established. Keep that in mind. Verse 16, if a false witness rise up against any man to testify against him that which is wrong, then both the men between whom the controversy is shall stand before the Lord, before the priest, and the judges, which shall be in those days. And the judges shall make diligent inquisition. And behold, if the witness be a false witness, and hath testified falsely against his brother, then shall ye do unto him as he hath thought to have done unto his brother. So shalt thou put evil away from among you. And those which remain shall hear and fear, and shall henceforth commit no more any such evil among you. Look at verse 21. And thine eye shall not pity, but life shall go for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Again, the context has to do with a court setting. And as you think about the court setting there in verse number 21, there is to be no pity for those who are guilty of committing a crime. No place in a court for pity. Punishment would be met out. And so as you look at Deuteronomy chapter 19, 21 through 22, there's a difference between human relations and the courts. But all three times, we see this phrase that we're talking about here in Matthew 5, verse number 38, being used again in a court setting, where people are brought before the judge. Now, I believe there are a lot of principles that we can learn from this court setting, this court scene that we see in all three examples. And let me just mention a few of these principles. For example, if you want to lower the crime rate in a society, give just punishment speedily. I believe you see those principles even in the Old Testament. And this particular statement that we're looking at, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, means that punishment must fit the crime. And when justice is carried out from Deuteronomy chapter 21, that phrase means that God has even placed boundaries on justice. But God put these boundaries there for a reason. But the most important thing that we can conclude from all three examples is that this phrase, again, doesn't relate to relationships. This phrase isn't used for taking vengeance against our neighbor, our fellow man. Now let's talk about the perversion of rabbinic teaching. The Pharisees and the scribes took a divine principle from the courts and they made it a matter of daily vendettas. They held grudges against others. And they would take Old Testament passages like we just talked about and they would twist it. They would make a tradition out of it so that they could carry out their daily vendettas. So that they can retaliate. And they would use the Scriptures again to justify their ungodly conduct. Now we know that because of how that phrase is used in the Old Testament Scriptures. Never once is it used in how we relate to one another. Always in the context dealing with civil issues, civil matters that were brought before the courts, that were brought before the judges. And we know from what Jesus taught earlier in the Sermon on the Mount that the Pharisees and the scribes were full of hatred. They were full of hatred. They were full of holding grudges. That's, in essence, Jesus says, if you were in my kingdom, if you were righteous, you wouldn't be vengeful like you are. And so they were taking matters of revenge into their own hands and using the Scriptures, twisting the Scriptures to justify themselves. How do we know that they were taking a divine principle from the courts and making it a matter of daily vendettas? Turn back, if you would, to Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus chapter 19, verse number 18. The law repeatedly forbade personal vengeance. God again repeatedly forbade His people to take personal vengeance. And you'll see this in Leviticus 19 verse number 18. Thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. Another example would be in Proverbs chapter 22, verse 22, Solomon taught his son to never say, I will recompense evil, but wait upon the Lord. And Solomon told his son, God will save you. You know, whether you look at the Old Testament, whether you look at the New Testament, God makes it clear that vengeance, Romans 12 verse 19, belongs to Him. We're to never take vengeance. We are to never retaliate. But as you know, when you look at the phrase and when you look at the Sermon on the Mount, many even today misapply what Jesus is teaching. Some will conclude that we are to be pacifists, that we should just let people walk on us and we should just let people hit us, and when somebody hits us we should just turn the other cheek. We should let people abuse us. We should let people just steal everything that we own. That's not what Jesus is teaching. And by the way, we can establish a foundational principle that helps us reason through all of this. And really, when you think about these matters that Jesus is about to talk about, there has to be some balance and there has to be some judgment and common sense. As I showed you from Leviticus chapter 19, verse number 18, God forbade His people from taking vengeance. But that didn't mean they couldn't defend themselves. How do you know that? Because of Exodus chapter 22. God talks about when somebody at night is breaking into your house, do you realize that God allowed His people to take life at that point? When somebody was trying to break in to your house, God wasn't teaching His people that they were to be pacifists, that they were just to open the door and say, come on in and take everything you want and hurt everybody that you want to hurt. No, God allowed His people, even in those situations, to protect themselves, to defend themselves. But in doing that, they were not taking vengeance. I truly believe that really helps us understand what Jesus is about to talk about. But we see the principle of how that phrase was used in Old Testament Scripture, and we notice how it was always applied to the courts. But then we also notice, again, the perversion of that Old Testament principle. How the Jews, how the Pharisees and scribes developed a tradition to justify their desire for revenge, of wanting to get even with them. Again, they took this very seriously. If you crossed them in any way, they were going to get even. And they found a way to justify that conduct. Now, as we go back to Matthew chapter 5, we see how Jesus puts this all into perspective. But I'm going to tell you, as we go through this, I'm going to be the first to tell you, this is challenging. And this is why it's important to remember that God's ways are so much higher, they are so much better than our ways, and why it's important to allow God's ways to be our ways. What Jesus is going to do, beginning at verse number 39, He is going to give four illustrations of life to help us understand what it means to be a citizen of God's kingdom. Four illustrations. And I'm going to give you a word for each illustration. We're going to use the word verse 39. We're going to consider the word dignity. Think about the word dignity as we read verse number 39. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. Now every one of us in here this morning has been created in the image of God. And every one of us in here should be treated with dignity, respect, and kindness. That is a right that you have. That is a right that I have, and rightfully so. Because we've all been created in the image of God, and we should be treated with great respect. But that doesn't mean we're always going to get it. As you know, people in the world can be very ugly. They can be very cruel, and they can treat you very badly. They can do things to you that you don't deserve. The Jews believed that the most demeaning act was a slap in the face. That's what they believed. So you see the Jewish thinking, and you see why Jesus chose these illustrations, because these illustrations go contrary to what they believed. If somebody was to smite them on the right cheek, they were ready to go to war. They were ready to throw down and listen, to take vengeance. I believe the point that Jesus is making here, when you're demeaned, when you are When you are dishonored, don't retaliate. Don't take vengeance. Let them do it again if you have the spirit of retaliation in your mind. Again, you go back to what we talked about earlier. And you see the same thing with God's people. It doesn't mean that Jesus is saying that we're letting people walk all over us and hit us until we're black and blue in the face. But don't do it out of a spirit of vengeance, of retaliation. You would be better off to turn the other cheek than to have a spirit of retaliation. I believe that's the emphasis that Jesus is trying to get across. That He wants us to understand as citizens of God's kingdom, vengeance belongs to Him. Look at verse number 40 and let's look at the word security. And again, it doesn't get any easier. As I said, it really challenges our thinking, but we have to put these things into perspective and we have to be balanced in our thoughts. But I'm going to tell you, the hardest thing is trying to find the balance. I know it is for me, trying to find the balance. And maybe it's just the way that I was brought up. Somebody hits me, I'm ready to go back behind the woodshed. But again, Jesus challenges our thoughts. I should never, under any circumstances, have a spirit of retaliation. I believe that's the emphasis, and that's what Jesus is wanting us to understand. Think about the word security here in verse number 40. And the second illustration is very graphic. Look at verse number 40. If a man will sue thee at law and take away thy coat. And the idea of coat is the undergarment, which would be the most valuable thing. If somebody was to take your jacket under the old law, at the end of the day, they would have to give it back. So there's a reason why Jesus is talking about the tunic, why he's talking about the undergarment here. He says, if a man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, listen to it. Let him have thy cloak, the undergarment. Let them have thy cloak also. If somebody sues you, again, your attitude shouldn't be, I'm going to get even. In fact, you would be better off to let them sue you and take everything that you own, instead of retaliating, wanting to get even. I think the point that Jesus is making here is this. People are going to take advantage of you. Don't retaliate. Don't try to get even with them when somebody tries to take advantage of you. As I said, we have to be very careful with this. I don't believe Jesus is saying that you can never defend yourself. Think about that. You know why I would say that? Acts chapter 22, verse 25. Paul was about to be beaten unlawfully. And Paul relied upon the law. You see that? He relied upon the court system. In Acts chapter 25, verse number 11, he didn't hesitate to appeal to Caesar. But in both of those examples, appealing to the courts and appealing to Caesar, Paul wasn't retaliating. He wasn't trying to get even. He was simply trying to defend himself. We have to be balanced. But I believe the idea is very clear. Jesus wants us to understand, listen, as a citizen of my kingdom, people in the world are going to take advantage of you. Don't retaliate. Don't get even. Don't try to get one ahead. Don't try to get back. Now, what's interesting is you think about this particular example. I would be a little bit more bold in this area. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, you have a horrible situation. You have a horrible situation in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. You know what the brethren were doing? They were taking one another to court before worldly judges to handle their disputes. I'm convinced after thinking about this and thinking about their mindset from the book of 1 Corinthians, they were doing this to get even with one another. Taking advantage of one another. And going before the courts. Paul comes in and says, you know what? I would rather lose everything than go to court with a brother in Christ. What a bold statement that Paul was making. But you see how people can even, on our brethren, how people can use the court system, if you please, to try to get even with others. It's not going to be easy. People are going to take advantage of you. As Paul would say in Romans 8 verse 36, we are counted as sheep for the slaughter. A lot of times Christians are easy prey because of the king that we follow. Notice the next illustration. As we look at this next illustration in verse 41, we'll look at the word liberty. Whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Under Roman law, a Roman soldier could walk up to a Jewish citizen and demand them to carry their backpack for them. But there was only one requirement, one law regulating that, and that is a Roman soldier could not bid you to carry it 2 miles, only 1 mile. They could walk up to you and ask you to carry their pack, to carry their armor, to carry anything that they had for only 1 mile. That's what the Roman law allowed. And so there's a reason why, again, Jesus would use this illustration, and the Roman soldiers didn't like the Jews, they didn't like the Pharisees, and you can only imagine what was going through the mind of the Pharisees as that Roman soldier asked that Pharisee to carry that pack. You can only imagine the conversations that they might have, the attitude that was displayed. You got to that 1 mile and they may have thrown down that pack and walked in the other direction. As I said, with each illustration, Jesus basically says the opposite of what the Pharisees and the scribes would teach. If a Roman soldier comes up to you and he asks you to carry his pack and you have places to go, you do so again with the right spirit. And you go out of your way. When somebody infringes on your liberty, you do the opposite. Somebody asks you to go a mile, you go with him too. Think about what the Lord, again, is demanding of us. Contrary, I promise you, to human nature. Every one of these illustrations is contrary to human nature. I'll make that point again at the end of the lesson. But for time's sake, look at the last illustration there in verse number 42. Give to him, and we'll look at the word property, okay? Give to him that ask thee, from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. In essence, don't hold on to what belongs with you with a tight grip. You know why? Because it really doesn't belong to you. It belongs to God. And we are to use the things that God has given us to help others. I believe as you look here at verse number 42, give to him that ask thee. We're talking about a real need. We're not talking about people who are trying to be bums and that are trying just to live off the government and everybody else. Again, there's got to be some balance in all of this. For example, in 1 Timothy 5 verse number 8, if any man provide not for his own, he's worse than an infidel. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, if a man doesn't eat, doesn't work, neither shall he eat. Again, there's got to be balance. But there's also genuine needs. And when it comes to those genuine needs, when it comes to our possessions, our property, We need to remember that what we have from God is a blessing, and we are simply stewards of what God has given us. As you therefore have opportunity, do good unto all men, especially unto them who are the household of faith. Galatians 6, verse 10. In Proverbs chapter 3, verse 27 and 28, Solomon says, withhold not good from them to whom it is due. When is the power of thy hand to do it? Say not unto thy neighbor, go and come again tomorrow, and I will give it to you when you have it. You see, that's the idea. When you have it, when you're able to help others. Again, we should go out of our way. And so what is the emphasis? What is the point that Jesus is making in this illustration? To sum it up, we could say this. Don't resist those who are trying to mistreat you and take advantage of you. Don't ever retaliate, but you go out of your way to help them. And you know what? When you do that, like Jesus, you will shock them. And you will show them the love of God. As Paul would say in Romans 12, verse number 20, you will heap coals of fire upon their head. And by the way, that doesn't mean that you go in and you dump your barbecue pit on them, okay? No, the idea is that you will soften their heart. When you respond in a Christ-like fashion. In fact, verse 21, Paul says, you overcome evil with good. The point is when you go about doing good to those who are trying to mistreat you and to take advantage of you, you can show them the love of God. And by your example, you can bring them to Jesus Christ. Dear friends, there is no question that each one of these illustrations that we just talked about this morning is challenging. Why is it challenging? Because it goes against human nature, rightfully so. Because each one of these illustrations doesn't have to do with human nature. It has to do with divine nature. Read 2 Peter chapter 1, verse number 4. It has to do with divine nature. This is God's instruction to us. And do you realize that when we respond the way that Jesus wants us to respond, when we take ourselves out of the picture as we are to do, we are partakers. I love the point. We are partakers of God's divine nature. I want to end by turning over to the book of 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 2. As we think about each one of these illustrations, I promise you, as I was thinking about this, I felt the challenges, even in my own life, and how I should respond to those who mistreat me, to those who may want to take advantage of me. And I came to this conclusion. The Lord is simply asking me to do what He's already done. And you see this right here. And I'm going to show it to you in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. For even hereunto were you called, because Christ suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow His steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in His mouth, who when He was reviled, reviled not again. When He suffered, He threatened not, but listen to it, but committed Himself that judgeth righteously. He turned it over to His Father, who His own self bare our sins in His own body on the tree, that we, being dead to sins, should live unto righteousness, by whose stripes you are healed. You think about each illustration that Jesus gave. That is exactly what He did. Oh, He had rights, just like we all. He had rights, but He gave up all of those rights to do His Father's will. John chapter 18, He was struck on the cheek. He was spit upon. In Mark 14, verse number 16, He was silent before His false accusers. Oh, He had a right to say something. And He had the right to call 10,000 legions to His defense, but He chose not to do so. And you think about His possessions. He gave up everything that He had, even the very shirt off His back, As we see in Matthew 27, verse 34, His garments were separated, divided among the guards. Jesus said, "If any man come after Me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow Me." He also would say in Luke 14, verse number 33, "Whosoever he be that forsaketh not all that he has, shall not be My disciple. He that findeth his life shall lose it, but he that loseth his life for My sake," Matthew 10, verse number 39, "shall find it." Jesus is simply giving us an illustration what that looks like as citizens of God's kingdom. And listen, we should be willing to give up everything, if need be, for the cause of Christ. You know why? Because heaven will surely be worth it all. The lesson is yours. This morning, if we can help you in any way become more spiritual, if we can help you become a Christian, won't you please come right now as we stand.